Algonquin Park is one of Ontario's great treasures, a mere 3-hour drive from here and home, of course, to the moose. And while many of us have been there and maybe seen a moose, it would seem that few of us have actually seen one of its other residents, the wolf. Algonquin Park hosts 150 to 175 wolves at the moment, but judging by our responses this morning, very few of us have actually seen a wolf in the wild. But this morning, I want to introduce you to a most fascinating individual. His name is Rick McIntyre. He's author of multiple books on wolves, including The Rise of Wolf 8 and, of course, The Reign of Wolf 21. He's one of the world's foremost experts on wild wolf behavior, and that is because the man has simply put in mind-blowing amounts of time studying wolves in the wild. To date, he's recorded over 100,000 sightings of wild wolves, which is more than any other person in human history. He's also written more than 7 million words of notes on wolf observations, which sounds like a random number, but consider this. The Bible is only a book of 800,000 words, and this guy's written 7 million words about wolves. And not only that, Rick has traveled into Yellowstone National Park every single day tracking wolves since June 12, 2000. I mean, think about that. Someone like Cal Ripken was, of course, famous for playing 2,632 consecutive baseball games. That was, of course, interrupted by days off and winters. But Rick has spent more than 7,000 consecutive days studying wolves in Yellowstone National Park. And why I've become intrigued by wolves is largely due to Rick. And he has spent all this time with them, and he's made some really key observations about wolves, especially how they relate to humans. He says this, "Wolves are more like humans than they are given credit for. In their tribal ways and territoriality and their tendency to mate for life and in the way male wolves provide food and care for their offspring, which is so unusual in the animal world. As the early 20th century English philosopher Carvith Reed has said, humans in character are more like a wolf than any other animal." According to those who spend the most time with wolves, it's not chimpanzees or apes that are humans' closest cousin, it's the wolf. And that, of course, starts to make sense of our collective obsession with dogs, right? You see, all modern dogs that we know today, all the way from massive St. Labradors to those yappy little Chihuahuas, all dogs descended from wolves. And best guesses estimate that somewhere around 130,000 years ago, some human tamed a wolf. And ever since then, dogs and humans have been the best of friends. In fact, understanding that all dogs come from wolves actually helps us understand some odd dog behavior. Consider this. Why does your dog love running up to you and licking your face the moment you come home and in from the door? Well, here's the thing. In the wild, adult wolves, they hunt large prey, and they take them down often miles away from where their den sites are. Now, instead of hauling a large carcass all the way back to the den site, they have a more convenient, albeit disgusting, way of carrying food back to their young. They eat pounds and pounds of meat, then travel back to their young and regurgitate it. But of course, this process needs some sort of prompt, and so when adult wolves come back to their younger ones, little wolves, they lick the snout and face of adult wolves, and that prompts a regurgitation process. They give them meat, the young eat. And so next time your dog licks you in the face, remember, what they really are hoping from you is that you'll throw up so they can eat. But back to wolves. I've always thought wolves are interesting, right? I mean, they're the apex predators of their environment. Their hunting skills are legendary. But it wasn't until I came across Rick and his words about the relationship between wolves and humans that I found myself wanting to know more. And this summer, what I really wanted to do was to participate in a tradition that goes back over 50 years. You see, in Algonquin Park, every single summer on Thursdays, in August, Algonquin Park hosts a public wolf howling expedition. And the event begins with a presentation on wolf ecology, and then people drive to somewhere along Highway 60 and they quietly wait while naturalist staff perform wolf howls that the park resident wolves will hopefully respond to and howl back. Now, I get it. This probably seems really nerdy to some people, but after I started reading Rick, I was like, I really want to go. In fact, these events are wildly popular. Although, consider this, the last successful public wolf howl they had happened back in August of 2013. That's 8 years ago, so your likelihood of hearing wolves, not very great. Even still, people throng to these events. Most public wolf howls, they attract 2,500 people or more in as many as 500 cars. You see, for many, the opportunity to hear wolves howling in the wild is one of those sort of bucket list things. Because in the natural world, there may be no sound that is more iconic or haunting than the sound of wolves howling. What people want to hear is this. Now, much to my chagrin, the wolf howls were canceled this past year due to COVID, like everything else, so I never got the opportunity. Someday soon, maybe. But here's the thing. The sound of wolves howling can make us feel haunted, lonely, in awe. But why exactly do wolves howl in the first place? And McIntyre and other leading wolf experts, they believe that wolves howl for two primary reasons. First, because wolves are territorial, they howl to ward off rival packs. Their howls, you could say, are a response to a threat. Wolves howl as an act of defiance and resistance to ward off threats. Second, wolves howl within their own packs, it turns out, as a sign of love and affection. It's a bonding moment for them. It's a vocalized act of bonding together. And for those who spend their days tracking wolves, it's very common to encounter wolves standing around together howling. And would seem wolves howl in order to build and maintain social bonds. Which got me thinking. The signature sound of the wolf is its howl. It's their sound of both defiance and affection. It's their sound to ward off threats while bonding with their own. And I thought to myself, given that humans are so similar to wolves, I couldn't help but think, do we humans have a sound that we make that might function in the same way? As it turns out, we do. And it sounds like this. Laughter. If howling is the wolf's signature sound, well, then laughing is the human equivalent. Human laughter has been long a fascination throughout history. Those who study human nature, in fact, it dates all the way back to Aristotle, who believed this, that laughter is what separates human beings from all other creatures. And Barry Sanders, author of Sudden Glory, says that not only did Aristotle believe laughter is what makes humans unique, but he went further than that. He suggested that the first time you laugh might actually be the most important moment of your life. You see, for Aristotle, we don't truly become human until we laugh. We move from being a human into a human being the first time we laugh. And he noted that that's usually between 40 and 90 days after we're born. Now, I'm not so sure about Aristotle's theory there, but it does point back to the defining capacity that laughter is for being human. It points to this long-standing curiosity and fascination we've had with laughing. It speaks to what makes us unique, and yet the whole thing, when you consider it, is very, very odd. I mean, where did it come from? Well, Dr. Joanne Bakarowski at Vanderbilt University, she has collected the sound of over 30,000 people laughing, and she's analyzed every single one of them. And it turns out when you look at the sonic frequencies of laughter, they all look remarkably similar. And it is thought that laughing evolved from panting. You see, some species like chimps, they pant as a way of communicating, and the road from panting to laughter is not that far. Ha, 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 panting to laughter. I find listening to people laugh to be contagious. I love hearing people laugh. I love laughing. I mean, laughter is probably one of the most enjoyable sounds in all of the world, and yet it's awkward. I think we all know that person who has a bit of a weird laugh. It's bizarre. Tyler Stillman from Florida State University, he says this, "Here we are, this species with the capacity for language which allows us exquisitively nuanced expressions. And yet we produce these kinds of bizarre sounds. Laughter is a kind of clumsy, inarticulate way of expressing ourselves." But what exactly is it expressing? Why do we laugh? Well, I think there are clues both from science and from God. I believe we're made in the image of God. And what I've come to think is this: like wolves, our laughter is meant to communicate two things, the same as howling. Laughter is about social bonding, but laughter is also about defiance and resistance. How so? Well, let's try a little experiment, shall we? Why don't we try laughing together? And granted, this won't be as easy as if it were in person, but it will have to make do. So go ahead, laugh. Not so easy, so why don't I get us started? And here's what I did to help us with a prompt for laughter. First of all, I enlisted my three favorite laughing friends, Riley, Lindsay, and Cliff. Now, these three people are fantastic people all around, but their laughs just do something to me. Riley, he's got a wheezy laugh that just makes you crack up because it seems like he's gonna die of a heart attack while he's laughing. Lindsay, her laugh is infectious and she laughs very easily, so it comes very naturally for her. And Cliff, well, there's both a joy and mischief to his laugh that I find absolutely infectious. So what I did is this: I went and visited my friends, outside of course, with a mask, and I recorded them laughing, and that wasn't an easy process. I had to pull out all the stops for that. But eventually I got the sound of them laughing. And then what I did is I put those sounds together, and then what I did is this. Last week I asked you to send me the funniest stuff you could, and you responded in a really awesome way. And so what I did one night this week is I took all of the stuff that you sent me, along with some friends and others as well, and I watched or listened to them all or read them all in one go. And then I put this camera on me to get myself laughing. So, here's what we've got. Me laughing with my friends, Riley, Cliff, and Lindsay. So let's try this. Shall we laugh? Let's give it a try. Now, the question is this: did you laugh? Let me know in the comment section here. I need to know if my experiment worked. Please let me know. Did you laugh? Was the sound of laughter alone enough to make you start giggling? Did it work? Let me know in the comments. Now, here's the thing that's of interest to me. Robert Provine, he's a neuroscientist at University of Maryland. He says this: the most important thing to remember about laughter is that it's social. And here's where he starts to blow my mind. He studied what makes people laugh. He's recorded hundreds and thousands of conversations that led to laughter. And what he has found is mind-blowing. In 85% of cases where people laughed, nothing funny preceded the laugh. Which, if you laugh just now at the video of me and others laughing, it sort of proves the point. You see, I asked us to laugh, and then I showed us a video of me and others laughing, but nothing funny was said. See, there was nothing funny going on, and the reason laughter is contagious is because, not that there's something funny going on, but because it's social bonding, like wolves howling. Provine has found that when he studied people who laughed in conversation, most laughs were preceded by the most banal of observations and comments, routine things like, hey, where have you been? Or, hey, I've got to go now. These are the kind of things we humans laugh at, the routine things people say. And sometimes, as we just showed, hopefully the experiment worked, nothing needs to be said at all. Laughter is less about funny and more about relationships, because laughter's primary function is actually about social relationships. When you're alone, consider this, laughter basically disappears. And I know what some of you are probably thinking, well, wait, when I'm watching TV or listening to a podcast, I laugh then. Yes, but those are sort of vicarious social stimulants. If you take away media, no radio, no audio, no TV in your ears, laughter disappears. And what Provine has found is this in his studies. Essentially, all you need to laugh is for someone else to laugh. Laughter causes laughter. And if you laughed at the video this morning, you know this to be true. And why? Because laughter is actually about social bonds. It's about bonding with a group of people. And in this respect, I've come to think laughter might be one of the most important tools we have for community building. You see, laughter to me, as it turns out, is actually rather serious business. Because when you want to develop trust in relationships and communities, laughter is one of the best tools we have for creating it. Should church be funny? Should groups of friends and communities be funny? Of course they should, because we only laugh when we trust those around us. Laughter is serious business. It establishes bonds, trust, and commitment. But like wolves howling, our laughter also has a second function. It's an act of resistance to threats. And how do I know this? Well, science backs this up, but so does God. I mean, consider this. Does God laugh? You know, the question made me curious as I was studying for this sermon, and I set out to search scriptures. Do we have any moments recorded where God is laughing? It turns out, not so much. And any allusion we have to God laughing, of course, is a form of anthropomorphism, but I did find a few references. And what intrigued me most was not so much that God laughs, but what God laughs at. Now, all three of these examples, they come from the book of Psalms, where the writers are expressing their fears in face of a threat. They're worried about external threats, so they pray that to God, and God seems to respond to these threats with laughter. Check it out. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds asunder and cast their cords from us. He who sits in heaven laughs. The Lord has them in derision. This is curious to me. The psalmist recounts peoples and nations. They're plotting evil. They're plotting against God. And God's response to this threat is to laugh. The same idea plays out in other psalms. The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them, but the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he sees that their day is coming. God has the long view here and can see past the threats of the moment. And in doing so, God understands that wickedness or any threat to what's right or good or lovely, it won't ultimately last. And so in the face of a threat, God laughs. Because in seeing the long view, God knows these threats can't ultimately win. Or consider this psalm, Psalm 59. In this psalm, David, of course, is being watched by King Saul, who's trying to kill him. Now, remember, God has promised that David is going to take the throne. That is God's promise. But now David is being hunted down. Saul's trying to kill him. David's scared. He's weary. He's anxious. And God's response to all of it? Laughter. Deliver me from my enemies, oh my God. Protect me from those who rise up against me. Deliver me from those who work evil. From the bloodthirsty, save me. Even now they lay in wait for my life. The mighty stir up strife against me. For no transgression or sin of mine, O Lord, for no fault of mine, they run and make ready. Rouse yourself. Come to my help and see. You, Lord God of hosts, are God of Israel. But you laugh at them, O Lord. You hold all the nations in derision. Oh, my strength, I will watch for you. For you, O God, are my fortress. My God in his steadfast love will meet me. My God will let me look in triumph on my enemies. Again, in the face of a threat to God's purpose that David would serve as king, God laughs. And these are the only three portraits of God laughing in scripture that I can find, but what intrigues me is not so much that God laughs, but why God laughs. God laughs as an act of defiance, mockery, disdain, and resistance in the face of perceived threats. Being made in the image of God, we should do the same. And I get it, that probably sounds a little trite at first hearing. We might think to ourselves, laugh when it's hard? That's the easy thing to do. Whoa, wait. Remember this, laughter is what makes us fundamentally human. It's part of what makes us who we are. And the moment we lose that, our humanity starts to shrivel and disappear. Laughter is not only an expression of our humanity, laughter also is a means to maintain our humanity, especially in the face of threats and trials and suffering. I mean, consider the words of Viktor Frankl. Once again, we've come back to him a few times this year. His book, Man's Search for Meaning, Reflections While Spending Time in Auschwitz, the concentration camp. I mean, how do you rebel and act in defiance against such reckless hate in a place like that, in a hellhole like Auschwitz? How do you maintain your dignity as a person, your sanity? How do you maintain or find any kind of zest for life under those conditions in a concentration camp? Well, Frankl says this, by laughing. Hear his words. Humor was another of the soul's weapons in the fight for self-preservation. It is well known that humor, more than anything else in the human makeup, can afford an aloofness, an ability to rise above any situation, even if only for a few seconds. I love that. More than anything else in the human makeup, laughter is what gives us the ability to rise above any situation. And sometimes, sure, that only lasts for a few seconds, but laughter. You know, in every sermon, theoretically, you're supposed to have one big point. I violate that rule often, but every sermon in theory is supposed to have one big point, one big takeaway. So here it is for this morning. Laugh more. You know, we are living through perhaps the most anxious period of time in any of our lifetimes. We're stressed, we're scared, we're tired, we're spent. And COVID and everything else happening in the world today, it feels like the biggest external threat all of us have collectively faced in all of our lifetimes. How do we respond? Laughter. We laugh as a community dedicated to the Christian path because we remain, even through all of this, committed to one another. But we also laugh as an act of defiance, resilience, resistance. Laughing is not trite, it's serious business. As Frankl reminds us, it's the God-given tool we've been given to rise above any situation that threatens us, even if it's only for a few seconds. So, do whatever you need to do this week and for the rest of this thing to find more laughter in life. Watch more funny shows. Watch stand-up comedians. Commit to finding laughs in your day. Find humor in the things we often miss. Contact a funny friend. Share stories of humor. Whatever you need to do to find it, laugh. Because while COVID has stolen our freedoms, burdened us with stress, anxiety, and fear, we resist and defy it every time we chuckle. You see, COVID, you can take a lot from us, but you can't take our joy. You can't take our laughter. You can't take our fundamental humanity. And so remember, every time you laugh in this, it's a declaration. COVID, divisive politics, whatever the threat is to you, you scoundrel and thief, you can rob me of seeing friends and family, you can burden me with anxiety and fear, but you can't take our humanity. COVID, you might still be around and you might be evolving with your different variants, but we're still laughing and you can never take that from us. Now, friends, it would be odd and a missed opportunity to deliver a sermon on laughing and not try to make you laugh more. And that's no easy proposition because, well, we're separated by cameras and, well, it's just tricky. But I decided to rise to the challenge. And so, this past week, for the first time in my life, I recorded my first ever stand-up comedy routine in front of a live audience. And this morning, I'm going to share it with you. Now, I hope it makes you laugh. My guess is it actually makes you groan and sigh and roll your eyes. However, I give you, for the first time ever, Brad's stand-up comedy routine. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for coming out, staying up past your bedtime. I appreciate it. You know, it's good to be here with you in the city of Kitchener. Love this city, of course. Now, if I had one complaint about the city of Kitchener, it would be the amount of parking tickets these people hand out. I'm telling you, you park anywhere for 5 minutes illegally and they're on you. With the amount of tickets the city of Kitchener hands out, I'm surprised they haven't gone after Santa Claus. Of course, Santa would never get a parking ticket. His parking's on the house. Now, of course, Valentine's Day is coming up. Valentine's Day, I'm sure everyone's excited about that, but not me. I'm not a big fan of Valentine's Day, commercialized romanticism. I am the type of guy who shows my love every day, but you know who is really big on the Valentine's Day, really loves Valentine's Day? Well, it's the skunks, of course. And the skunks, well, why do the skunks love it? Well, because they're very sentimental. Anywho, of course, we're all suffering under the scourge that is the COVID virus. I would love to tell you jokes tonight about COVID, but being under lockdown, they'd all be inside jokes. Things are getting weird around here, and, well, that didn't go so well. So I guess I won't be quitting my day job anytime soon, but we've been locked together for too long. Things are getting strange. Anyway, friends, keep laughing. Because every laugh, snort, chuckle, it's a defiant cry that we are made in the image of God who laughs in the face of threats. It's a resistance against the fear and anxiety of our age that allows us to rise above, even if only for a few seconds. And the truth is, I so hope we can laugh together again in person sometime soon. Nothing would do me better than to be in a room with all of you and to hear us laughing together. I can't tell you how much I hope that day comes so soon. Till then, well, we'll leave it here, but do remember we have a Nexus family meeting directly following the service in about, 30 seconds. You can click on the link below and just join us in Zoom. It'd be great. We've got some things to talk about, Nexus plans, Nexus stuff coming up, so we would love to have you join us there. But while I hope I see you there for this week, for this day, may you find much that makes you laugh. And may you always remember to keep howling. Go in peace.